Greetings, warriors, veterans, and America-loving citizens from sea to shining sea. Welcome to Frontlines of Freedom. I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. Hoo-wah! The Frontlines of Freedom team really appreciate you joining us this fine day in America. We are proud Americans as we welcome this new year. Here's what we have for you this hour. We're going to start by talking with Dr. Debbie Dorn about trauma. Then we'll review the movie of the month with Diane Raver, and then the battle of the month with General Chris Petty. Of course, we'll conclude with our military history and our self-defense report. So, it's a pleasure to introduce Dr. Deborah Korn. Her long suit is dealing with PTSD using EMDR, something I never heard of until I heard about her and we met. Her description is that it's, quote, an evidence-based memory-focused trauma therapy that can bring about a reduction in symptoms and a level of peace and healing within a finite number of sessions. Previously, this kind of change has been possible only after years of talk therapy, if ever. So how could I not want to know about that? So welcome to the show, Dr. Korn. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Hey, I'm glad this worked out. Debbie, start by telling us about your background. What brought you into the medical field and this portion of it? What are you doing now?
Well, I am one of those types that was interested in psychology from very, very early on in my life. I majored in psychology in college. I pursued a doctorate. And from the very earliest days, I've been interested in treating people who've been affected by trauma. I'm a licensed clinical psychologist. I maintain a private practice in Cambridge, Massachusetts. And I'm also an adjunct training faculty member at Bessel van der Kolk's Trauma Research Foundation in Boston. I was trained in EMDR, which we'll be talking about in a few moments, by Dr. Francine Shapiro, the developer of EMDR, in 1991 and 92. And I've been on the faculty of the EMDR Institute, Dr. Shapiro's Institute, for the past 28 years. And I've spent time authoring, co-authoring many articles and chapters focused on EMDR therapy, particularly applications of this therapy in working with complex post-traumatic stress disorder.
Well, is this new, Debbie? Because I know an awful lot of people that should be involved in this. And as we pointed out in my quote from you earlier, before, this is something that might never be healed, or if it did, it'd take years. Is this new?
No, this is not a new therapy. Francine Shapiro, the developer of this therapy, published the very first research study in 1989. And so it has been around for decades. And one of the reasons why I'm talking with as many people who will have me on their shows is because I want the public to know that we have a psychotherapy that can really make a difference, that they do not have to continue to suffer.
That's phenomenal, because it's not just them, of course, it's their family and their friends. And
yes,
I mean, this is just amazing. Talk to us about it. How does it work, or what's different? I don't even know enough to ask an intelligent question. So make me sound smart.
Well, let me begin at the beginning. So EMDR, the letters EMDR stand for eye movement, desensitization, and reprocessing. It's a mouthful. Desensitization refers to the reduction of distress, fear, and anxiety. Reprocessing refers to the reevaluation or the restructuring of thoughts and beliefs, and the transformation of one's sense of self relative to past traumatic experiences. EMDR is about moving the past fully into the past and gaining new perspective. And then there's the eye movement component. Now, Francine Shapiro, the developer of EMDR, accidentally discovered that purposely moving your eyes horizontally back and forth while focusing on a traumatic memory leads to a reduction in the vividness and emotional intensity of the memory. She developed an effective protocol for treating PTSD and trauma-related problems using eye movements and published the first research study on this approach, as I mentioned, in 1989. And in that study, she worked with rape survivors and combat veterans, hence the name eye movement desensitization and reprocessing.
Wow. So this has been done. It was done legitimately. It's done and it's been known, and it's just not out there.
Well, it is out there and known more and more, but we are working really hard, particularly on the heels of the pandemic and so much trauma in the world today. We are really working to get the word out to the public.
Yes, ma'am. I mean, this is so true for everything. Yes, it's important for combat veterans, but for everybody.
Everyone.
And as you say, particularly after this pandemic.
Yeah. Let me tell you a little bit more about EMDR so people can begin to understand what we have here. As you said, it's an evidence-based, memory-focused psychotherapy that helps people deal with the impact and legacy of trauma and adverse experiences in their lives. And even though it was originally developed to treat PTSD, it's now being used to address a wide range of diagnoses and issues, many not necessarily or initially recognized as trauma-based: depression, phobias, anxiety and panic, pain and medically unexplained symptoms, even psychotic symptoms and addictions. And EMDR is based on the idea that psychological problems are related to a failure to adequately process traumatic experiences and memories. So unprocessed traumatic memories, frozen or locked in our nervous system, continue to affect how we perceive things, decisions we make, reactions we have, and the beliefs we hold about ourselves and others. And then present day triggers activate these unprocessed traumatic memories, leading to symptoms that cause ongoing distress. And in EMDR therapy, we activate a specific memory through a series of questions. Questions like, what picture represents the worst part of this memory? What's the belief about yourself that comes up with this memory? And then we introduce 30 to 60 second sets of eye movements or back and forth stimulation to jumpstart and support the brain's stalled information processing system. And over the years, we've discovered that other forms of what we call bilateral stimulation are also effective in reducing distress. We might have clients track our fingers with their eyes as the fingers move back and forth, or track a light that moves back and forth, or we might have them listen to alternating tones, or we might tap back and forth on their hands as they rest them in their lap. But with every set of bilateral stimulation, the client is asked to simply notice what changes or emerges and to report images, thoughts, feelings, sensations, insights. We encourage them to just notice, to be a passenger on a train, just watching the scenery go by, always staying connected to the present moment, always with one foot in the present and one foot in the past. And with EMDR processing, a client's distress eventually decreases and relevant adaptive information located in other parts of the brain, helpful present-day perspectives get integrated. There's shifts in thoughts, feelings, behaviors, and physical sensations. And healing involves spontaneous movement toward more positive thinking, more manageable feelings, and a significant reduction in the level of disturbance experienced in one's body. So again, the goal is moving the past fully into the past.
That makes total logical sense. This is great. This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. We're talking EMDR for PTSD with Dr. Debbie Korn. Debbie, we're running a little bit out of time. What are the key points you want our listeners to take away from our conversation today? Because there's so many key points, I don't know where to start. Pick them for me.
Well, EMDR is an efficient and effective treatment for PTSD and a range of other mental health illnesses. It's endorsed, actually, by the Department of Veterans Affairs and the Department of Defense as a top-tier treatment for PTSD. And it's available within the VA system, as well as from civilian therapists in all 50 states and around the world. We have research that shows that after 12 EMDR sessions, 77.7% of combat veterans no longer meet criteria for PTSD. And it has a good track record, not only for PTSD, but also for depression and pain, issues that I know many veterans struggle with. So, final words, please don't wait. If you're struggling, please reach out.
And you've got a book. Give us a quick title and how people can get a copy.
Sure. So the book is called Every Memory Deserves Respect, which stands for EMDR. The book is written in two voices, the voice of a trauma expert, an EMDR expert, that's me, and the voice of a trauma survivor, an EMDR client, that's Michael Baldwin, my co-author. And if people are interested in learning more about the book and perhaps finding an EMDR therapist for themselves, we have a beautiful website. It's called everymemorydeservesrespect.com, the name of the book. And on the website, you'll find lots of information as well as links to where you can purchase the book and where you can search for an EMDR therapist in your area.
Fantastic. Debbie, thank you so much for taking time to join us today. And thank you for all you're doing for our nation.
You're very, very welcome.
And happy New Year.
Thank you. And happy New Year to you as well.
This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. It's time to run hard for a couple of miles, troops. Do this while thinking patriotic thoughts. I'll be right back.
$30 trillion in debt, 20 years of endless war, and veterans not able to get the care they deserve. These are some of the issues Concerned Veterans for America is confronting head-on. At CVA, we aim to amplify the veteran perspective to create a better future for all Americans. But we need your help. Join CVA in shaping a better tomorrow for you, your family, and your community. Visit cv4a.org to learn more and join the movement. That's cv4a.org.
Troops, America has changed, and if you're like me, you'd defend yourself and your family if necessary. But as noble as this is, experts recommend never speaking to the police without an attorney, even if you're the victim. That's why I'm a member of U.S. Law Shield, the very best self-defense insurance that I've found. They provide unlimited attorney coverage for civil, criminal, appeal, and retrial at a very affordable price. Check uslawshield.com and use the code FRONTLINES. That's uslawshield.com. I'm Colonel Danny Gillum. Thanks for joining us today on Frontlines of Freedom. It's New Year's weekend, and it's time to review the movie of the month for December with Diane Raver from the Garden State Film Festival. Welcome and Happy New Year, Diane.
Thank you, Danny. It's always a privilege and an honor to be with you.
And fun. Our movie for this month was Words of Wisdom from Admiral McRaven. To make an understatement, he had a lot of words of wisdom, and he shared them, and it was an amazing, it was just cool. I mean, what could you say?
Well, I also felt that young people should see this. I mean, even the part about making your bed, it was really true that, you know, having accomplished something every day, even if it was as minor as making your bed, is an important thing about your self-esteem, et cetera.
Yeah, having standards and setting them. On the other hand, it doesn't always have to include somebody yelling at you if it's not quite right. Nonetheless, it's your standards. This is about you getting you in order, not how the rest of the world treats you.
And I found it very uplifting and enriching. So I hope everyone enjoyed it as much as I did presenting it.
And I really appreciated the point he made, because I totally agree with him, that the things you learn in the military, they work everywhere. They're not just for the military. I've found that to be very true in my life. And he gave some incredibly good examples of how having somebody yelling at you actually can help make you a better person. That I don't think he was encouraging people to go find somebody to yell at them.
But I will speak to that, Denny. Having grown up in the film business in New York City, when I was coming along, if we made a mistake, people did yell at us, and then we never made the mistake again. I'm not sure that this new generation that you're not allowed to find displeasure with their work is actually enriching them or making them better stewards of whatever position they hold. I kind of feel like there's some, you know, learning from your mistakes is valuable. So, you know, I'm sure someone will find issue with that, but that's just my feeling also as a life lesson.
Well, it is. And, you know, there's different ways to correct. If you have any responsibility, it is your place to correct people, particularly people over whom you have authority, when they do something wrong. Now, you don't have to yell at them and pound them into the sand, but you do have to correct them, and you've got to do whatever it takes to get through. So absolutely. And yelling, frankly, if the worst thing that ever happened to you is you got yelled at, life would be pretty good, wouldn't it?
I think so.
Okay, let's try a few comments. Start by making your bed properly, a great start, but the people inspecting and punishing him were Marine sergeants, not Navy SEALs. Well, that's true. Marine sergeants are really good at yelling at people in their barracks. I've never seen a Navy SEAL do that. That doesn't mean they can't do it. But we've already discussed that as a good way to start your day doing something right that you can count on, and frankly makes it easier to go to bed. The next one was, good point that you can never be perfect, and you may have to pay the price for imperfection. Yeah.
That's our humanity.
That's right. You know, when you do something for me, I want it to be perfect. But when I do something for you and it isn't perfect, well, I'm human. So maybe we've just got to understand that we aren't perfect. We have to continue working on it, and we have to tolerate imperfection in others. But the world ain't perfect, and there we are. So do your best. When I was a Boy Scout, that was our motto, DYB, do your best.
That's right.
And I like this comment. The boat crew of the shortest men did the best. It's amazing what motivation will do. And this was sent by a short guy. You know, I'm sure that they were put together by height because they were carrying a boat together, and it's sort of awkward to have people of different heights carrying a boat on their head. And short guys do tend to get picked on. And short guys do, I noticed this at West Point, because we were put in companies height-wise. And the short guys always pushed to show that they were better. And because they pushed to show they were better, they often did better. Sounds like a reasonable statement, doesn't it?
It does. But weren't there some famous military short guys? Wasn't Napoleon short?
Oh, yeah. You know, God loves short people too, I think. Ooh, I shouldn't say that to you. Uh-oh. Excuse me, Diane. I be careful. I won't offend you. You know, I've always said for men that charm, personality, and good looks begin at 6'2". And since I'm 6'3", I just happened to luck into that. Anyway.
Well, there you go.
Here's the best comment. Life isn't fair. Don't expect it. And
amen.
Yes.
Isn't that the truth, you know?
And that might have been one of the bottom lines of the whole story. One of the guys said this was a really good movie, and he was taking a lot of notes, but the summary points popped up without any announcement. He missed half of them because they popped up while he was writing something else down. So I said,
That's the beauty of a link. You can watch it again.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Like the guy who went down the slide for life head first, take risks, but also be prepared for the risk attempt fail. You could end up in the hospital or whatever. Take risks, but be sure you know what you're doing and you know the consequences and are willing to pay the consequences if necessary. The person who is forever taking risks probably isn't going to last too long.
Well, they should be calculated risk, I think, is the point of the...
Well put.
Yeah.
Don't be afraid to fail. You'll never act if you can't fail. And that's true.
Right. There's the old adage, to get to the fruit of the tree, you got to go out on a limb. So,
well said. And I think our final one is face down the bullies. The world will love you for that. I have no use for bullies. Never had any use for them. But I've seen a bunch of them. Being 6'3", I didn't have to deal with too many of them.
No, I did. I always say I survived my elementary school. Nothing will ever frighten me again.
You know, in one way that's funny, but another stuff, that's really true, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. And we're talking with Diane Raver from the Garden State Film Festival. What a great movie. Indeed, everybody of every age should take a look at it. So, listeners, if you know somebody that ought to see it, it'll stay on my website for some time. Encourage them to take a look at it. The message is awesome. Well, Diane, we aren't done yet because January's here and you've got a movie for January already for us, don't you?
I do. And I always like to start the year with something really lovely and encouraging. And again, thought-provoking, which was the main goal of our film club here. So I hope everyone takes a minute to watch Two Strangers Who Meet 5 Times. It's a beautiful film. And I look forward to meeting next month when we can discuss it again. And I want to wish everyone out there, all the listeners from the Garden State Film Festival and myself, a very, very happy and blessed holiday season.
Yes, ma'am. And before I let you go, the Garden State Film Festival is in March, right? When is it in March?
March 23rd through the 26th. We're just finalizing the schedule. That will be up hopefully sometime mid-January. It's all live in person this year, and we hope that anyone who's in striking distance joins us.
Indeed. Diane, thank you. Thank you for being a great member of the team. Thank you for your great moves. God bless you. I'm so proud we work together.
Me too, Denny.
Coming up next on Frontlines of Freedom, we'll discuss the Battle of the Month with General Chris Petty. Then we'll open our weekly mailbag. This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. Troops, it's time for one-arm push-ups. Just do a dozen with each arm, twice. Then take a break and stay in the area. I'll be right back.
HelpVet.net was created to be the nation's number one resource center for all veterans, active military, and families. At HelpVet.net, you'll find up-to-date information on benefits available through the VA, resources on education, employment, health and wellness, and more. Find hundreds of nationally recognized organizations offering discounts on products and services, as well as local organizations from attorneys to yoga studios. You'll find them at HelpVet.net. Visit HelpVet.net for all your family's needs.
Friends, there's not too many things I enjoy more than helping veterans and eating great beef jerky. Now I can do both. My good friends at Tango3.org and America's Best Beef Jerky use the highest quality beef to make the best jerky I've ever tasted. Trust me, I've eaten a lot. But that's not all. They give 100% of the profit to veterans programs, mental health and suicide prevention. Go to americasbestbeefjerky.com and order now. And at checkout, check the Frontlines of Freedom promo code. Welcome back to Frontlines of Freedom. I am Colonel Denny Gillum. Troops, I really do welcome your comments and questions. Contact me through frontlinesoffreedom.com or on Facebook. And now it's time for the Battle of the Month for December. Joining us, of course, is retired General Chris Petty. Welcome, brother.
Thank you, Denny. Always a pleasure to be with you.
Yes, sir. Chris, give us a quick review of your time in Mother Army.
Okay. Commissioned in 87 out of the same place you were, West Point. Go Army, beat Navy. Great football game, by the way, as a side note. I went aviation, so I did a lot of aviation stuff, as you might expect. You know, company command, platoon leader, company command, battalion S3, which is operations. Eventually commanded a battalion in Iraq, which was the highlight of my military career as a tactical leader. There's no question about it. And it was during the surge. So we were very busy. Aircraft were getting shut down everywhere. So it was an intense period of life. After that, the battalion did well enough. That led to some other opportunities for me. And before you knew it, I was a brigade commander deploying other units to different wars. And then I got promoted to general officer and went to the Pentagon, learned how the Army thinks and breathes and allocates resources and makes decisions. And then went over to Bosnia, commanded the NATO headquarters there, learned about, you know, the multinational operations of a military. And then I terminated actually out of U.S. NORTHCOM in a combatant command, kind of learning that level. So really fascinating, rewarding, interesting career. I have no regrets, and I am so honored to have done it.
Bro, I totally understand and agree. The battle of the month for the month of December is the Battle of Pearl Harbor. We've talked about that on this show, but it is such an important battle. And there's so many different aspects to it that I'm glad we're hitting it again. Take us there, bro.
Okay, Pearl Harbor, 7 December 1941. Why we should know about this battle, why every American should know it, is because, number one, it forced the United States into World War II. It wasn't Hitler in Germany. And by this time, Hitler is basically owning Europe at the end of 1941. We've already had the Battle of Britain. France is already occupied. So that was focusing our attention, but this is the battle that drew us into the war. So that's important by itself. The other reason I think everyone should know it, this is the represents one of the greatest surprise attacks in history. I mean, you got to give it to the Japanese. They planned it, they executed it, and they pulled it off as a complete and utter surprise attack with devastating effect.
They sure did.
Yeah, and then the last reason I think every American should know it, besides the obvious cultural history of what it means to be an American and a common shared history that we all celebrate and acknowledge, is it's a great example of how you can create this tactical success, not just in military stuff, but think about the broader aspect of life. Tactical success, like Pearl Harbor, leads to abject strategic failure in the end. And I can talk about that at the end.
Yes, sir. That day, while you were there, if you were a Japanese pilot, it must have felt like you had done everything practically perfectly.
Absolutely. They really pulled this off well. And it's interesting, the quick lead up to the battle, because I think these things are interesting to set the stage. At this moment that Japan was doing this two-pronged deceptive strategy, their diplomats were in Washington talking about peace talks and negotiated settlements, because there was a lot of tension. Japan was definitely on the rise and being aggressive. They had already conquered parts of China and they were expanding their empire. So the U.S., there was a lot of tension. We already embargoed oil and steel and all that stuff. So their diplomats are in D.C. talking about peace while their military is planning this surprise attack. So it's kind of interesting how they played that double hand there. So Yamamoto, which everyone's heard of, he's the commander of all naval forces in Japan. He delegates his mission to Admiral Nagumo, who some of you have heard about. So he leads the attack on Pearl Harbor. So the convoy leaves, you know, in the month of November, and they set up shop for the attack 230 miles north of Oahu. And at 03:45 in the morning on 7 December, our minesweepers and a destroyer encounter a Japanese mini sub, and they sink it. They make the report, but it basically goes nowhere. At 07:40, the first wave of Japanese aircraft, 183 planes, lifts off from the carriers. They attack Battleship Row. Everyone's familiar with the two bombs that sank the Arizona, killing 1,100 soldiers almost immediately. They attack airfields, hangars, massive damage.
The Japanese, as you've already pointed out, planned it and executed it brilliantly because, yeah, we saw that sub and some radio operators on radar saw some planes coming in from the wrong direction. But since we were expecting some B-17s in that day, they were told to forget about it.
Yeah. Isn't that classic how those things line up to create problems? I mean, it's the history of warfare. You can see those things all the time. Yeah. So the U.S. forces on Oahu are scrambling desperately as the first wave hits. 38 U.S. planes get airborne. 10 of our planes are shot down. The U.S. manages to shoot down 9 Japanese planes, though, in the first wave. So small successes there. But it's just chaos. It's just rapid chaos on the ground, burning ships, exploding bombs, aircraft swarm in the air. At 9 o'clock, the second wave arrives. Lots more damage. They hit a lot of secondary targets. And at 9:50, it's over. Roughly 2,400 Americans are dead, 1,143 wounded. So it's a massive attack. It really cripples the Pacific Fleet at the cost of, I think the cost of 39 airplanes that Japan totally lost. They cripple the Pacific Fleet. And as your listeners know, fortunately, luck favored America on this day, besides the surprise. And that is the three main carriers were not docked in Pearl Harbor that day. They were out on different missions. And that was a very important turn of events, as would play out later at Midway and Coral Sea. And so in the end, you get this fantastic smashing tactical success for Japan, devastating the Pacific Fleet. But as I said in the beginning, it's this tactical success where Japan wanted to create this limited war. They really just wanted to cripple the fleet so they could continue to expand in a limited war scenario. But they created for themselves total war against the United States when, you know, after the uproar, and FDR had to rally the nation to basically total defeat of Japan. So it's an amazing story, start to finish. So many lessons and interesting stories in it. I hope every American becomes familiar with the Battle of Pearl Harbor.
Yeah. And, you know, we were shocked. On the other hand, had they also taken out all the fuel that was sitting out a few hills away, or the...
Repair facilities.
Yeah,
fuel storage, repair facilities, submarine pens. They didn't hit a lot of targets. And, you know, a lot of people don't know this, but Admiral Nagumo could have launched and was prepared to launch a third wave, but he called it off. And obviously that was a major error in hindsight, but he figured he had done enough damage and they just wanted to move on and get out of there. But he could have crippled the Pacific Fleet, left Pearl Harbor and Hawaii vulnerable to invasion and occupation. Pacific Fleet, if he would have launched that third wave, they may have had to relocate the entire fleet to San Diego.
Yeah.
And that would have changed the war in the Pacific for quite a while.
It would have. And you just never know, do you?
You never know. These things all hinge on specific things. And it's just a fascinating aspect of warfare.
So that's the Battle of Pearl Harbor. Chris, you have lots more information on other key battles, and it's available. How can listeners plug into that?
Yeah, thanks, Denny. My hope is that Americans take an interest in history, but not everyone wants to read the 300-page books. I get that. And so what I've done with a historical view, but also a military mindset, is I've created these simple, beautiful brochures, basically trifold brochures that summarize all these fantastic battles in about a 30-minute read. So you can subscribe. I mail you one every quarter. And, you know, it's less than $40 a year. And they're fantastic. It's like getting a Christmas present every quarter. So all you have to do is go to battledigest.com. Just battledigest.com. And find out more. See what you think. And I think you're going to be interested. It's just a great way to learn history.
It is. And the history of our country and the history of our country's military. That's awesome. Thank you, Chris. Thank you for sharing that. Thank you for being a great member of the Frontlines of Freedom team. Have a very happy new year and a fantastic 2023.
You too, Denny. You too. I wish you all the best in the next year. I'm looking forward to being with you throughout 23.
Hey, troops, if you're a veteran who's having trouble getting your disability approved by the VA, contact Barry Law. Contact them at PTSDlawyers.com. That's PTSDlawyers.com. I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. Next up, it's time for our weekly mailbag, then it's military history time. He's reported for duty to Frontlines of Freedom. Stand tall, troops. Let's do some more push-ups. About 60 this time. I want your ranger ready. Then stand at ease.
Fresh, flash, frozen from the American farmer every time. PatriotFoods.com, hit the shop now button. You're supporting a veteran family in need every time you shop. Look at us online, see how we give back. For the servicemen and women of this great country, we are fighting for the American farmer. PatriotFoods.com, promo code FREEDOM, 10% off today, folks. Shop now.
This is Colonel Denny Gillum. I buy Patriot Foods. It's great. PatriotFoods.com, promo code FREEDOM. Do you have a story inside you yearning to come out? As a self-published author, you are free to creatively distribute your book online or using your own professional connections. White Feather Press will publish your manuscript and set up online distribution, allowing the author to retain all copyright and distribution rights as well as all profits. Check out White Feather Press at publishyourdream.com. White Feather Press, reaffirming faith in God, family, and country. I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. This is the final formation for this week on Frontlines of Freedom. Okay, team, it's mailbag time. I welcome comments from you, our listeners. Do send your thoughts to me at denny@frontlinesoffreedom.com or on Facebook. Skip, what's the first comment?
Well, Sam, a Green Beret vet, really enjoyed our Christmas show, especially the interview with Santa. How did you get him to be interviewed?
Sam, we've been good all year, so contacting him was very easy. Ho, ho, ho. Right, Skip?
Absolutely. And Chris, an Army vet, really enjoyed your Service Academy football coverage. Why don't you also cover some other sport, like baseball?
Chris, we cover football because my good friend and football co-host Quentin Roberts played football at Air Force, and he's got the knowledge and contacts to make it work. We have no other serious jocks on the team. And now it's time for military history. What's first, Skip?
Well, on 10 January 1779, during the Revolutionary War, the French presented John Paul Jones with a dilapidated vessel, the Duc de Duras. This Jones refitted, mounted 42 guns, and renamed Bonhomme Richard in honor of Benjamin Franklin. On 19 June 1779, Bonhomme Richard sailed from Laurent, accompanied by four other U.S. warships with troop transports and merchant vessels to cruise against the British on the Bay of Biscay. Forced to return to port for repair, the squadron sailed again 14 August 1779, going northwest around the west coast of the British Isles into the North Sea and then down the east coast. The squadron took 16 merchant vessels as prizes. On 23 September 1779, they encountered the Baltic fleet of 41 sails under convoy of HMS Serapis and Countess of Scarborough. Bonhomme Richard engaged Serapis, and a bitter engagement ensued during the next 4 hours before Serapis struck her colors. Bonhomme Richard, shattered, on fire, and leaking badly, defied all efforts to save her and sank at 1100 hours on 25 September 1779. John Paul Jones sailed the captured Serapis to Holland for repairs.
And on 9 January 1861, a Union merchant ship, the Star of the West, was fired upon as it tried to bring supplies to Fort Sumter in Charleston, South Carolina. This incident was the first time shots were exchanged between the North and the South in the Civil War. but it didn't trigger the Civil War. When it seceded from the Union on December 20, 1860, South Carolina demanded the immediate withdrawal of the federal garrison at Fort Sumter in Charleston Harbor. President James Buchanan refused to do so, but was also careful not to make any provocative move. Inside the fort, Major Robert Anderson and his 80 soldiers needed supplies. The Buchanan administration decided to dispatch a civilian ship, the Star of the West, instead of a military transport to keep tensions from flaring. After the ship was en route, Secretary of War Joseph Holt received a dispatch from Anderson saying the garrison was safe and supplies were not needed immediately. Holt tried in vain to recall the Star of the West, and Anderson wasn't aware that the ship continued on its way. But on the morning of January 9th, the ship entered the channel near the fort. Two cannon shots roared from a South Carolina battery on Morris Island. They were fired by a cadet at the Citadel in Charleston. They were poor shots, but they represented the opening salvo of the war. More shots were fired, and the ship suffered a minor hit. Anderson watched from Fort Sumter, but did not respond in support of the ship. If he had, the war may have started on that day. This incident resulted in strong talks on both sides, but they stopped short of war. The standoff at Fort Sumter continued until the Confederates attacked in April, triggering the Civil War.
And on 10 January 1944, during World War II, the GI Bill of Rights, first proposed by the American Legion, was passed by Congress. The bill, more formally known as the Servicemen's Readjustment Act of 1944, was intended to smooth demobilization for America's almost 16 million servicemen and women. Post-war college and vocational school attendance soared as more than 50% of honorably discharged veterans took advantage of education benefits of up to $500 a year for tuition plus a living allowance. When they returned home to marry and start families in record numbers, veterans faced a severe housing shortage. The home loan provisions of the GI Bill provided more than 2 million home loans and created a new American landscape in the suburbs. In 1990, President George Bush summed up the impact of the GI Bill. Quote, "The GI Bill changed the lives of millions by replacing old roadblocks with paths of opportunity," unquote.
And on 9 January 1945, during World War II, General Douglas MacArthur and our 6th Army landed on Luzon, another step in the capture of the Philippine Islands from the Japanese. The Japanese had captured the Philippines in May of 1942, but in October 1944, over 100,000 American soldiers landed on Leyte Island to launch what was one of the bloodiest battles of the Pacific War and heralded the beginning of the end for Japan. MacArthur waded ashore at Leyte on October 20th, returning to the Philippines as he had famously promised that he would. During the 67 days it took to subdue the island before MacArthur could walk over the beach, over 80,000 Japanese soldiers were killed. Our forces lost about 3,500 men. The Sea Battle of Leyte Gulf was the same story. The loss of ships and sailors was horrendous on both sides. That battle also saw the introduction of the Japanese kamikaze suicide bombers. Over 5,000 kamikaze pilots died in this battle, taking down 34 ships. But the Japanese lost their biggest and best warships, which meant the virtual end of the Japanese Imperial Fleet. These victories permitted the landing of over 60,000 American troops on Luzon on January 9th. The initial ease of the American fighters' first week on land was explained when they discovered the intricate defense network of caves and tunnels that the Japanese had created on Luzon. The intention of the caves and tunnels was to draw the Americans inland while allowing the Japanese to avoid the initial devastating bombardment of an invasion force. Once the Americans reached them, the Japanese fought vigorously, convinced that they were directing American strength away from the Japanese homeland. Despite their best efforts, the Japanese lost the battle for Luzon and eventually the battle for control over all of the Philippines. And that's military history for today. Okay, Skip, it's time for our self-defense report. Take us there, bro.
Well, all of us here at Frontlines of Freedom want our listeners to get trained and get armed in that order. We fully support the right to keep and bear arms for all law-abiding families, and we encourage you to find out about the laws governing use of deadly force in your state and follow them to the letter. And, of course, don't forget to follow the rules of safety and common sense whenever you're carrying a firearm to protect the ones you love. What's the story this week, Colonel?
This one's interesting. A Florida defender with a Ring doorbell camera caught four youths seeking to enter his home. Though the homeowner knew what was waiting him, he opened the door. All four assailants rushed him. The defender, who was armed, drew his weapon, but it was wrestled away from him. As the home invaders ransacked his house, the homeowner retreated to the bedroom where he picked up his AK-47 rifle. He then fired at the intruders inside the house and pursued them outside, still shooting as they rode away. Wow.
Well, there's a lot we can talk about concerning this incident, but I want to focus primarily on the Ring doorbell the homeowner had installed. The Ring doorbell is fairly new to home security. It was launched in 2017, and it has greatly improved the homeowner's ability to ascertain who is at their door and whether or not they're a threat. There's a wide variety of Ring doorbells out there, depending on how many features you want and how much you want to spend. The basic model costs you about $60, and the most advanced models will run up to about $250. Ring doorbells have a video camera and also a motion detector. Some even have floodlights. When it detects motion, the doorbell starts to record. It also can send a notice to your cell phone, iPad, laptop, or PC. The more expensive models even work with Alexa. Some are powered with rechargeable batteries, some are hardwired, and you can even buy one that is solar powered. The picture resolution is high definition and much improved over early video surveillance cameras. Most models are color video. And here's something you Special Forces guys will appreciate. They also have night vision, and it's not the green picture, it's in full color. Another nice feature is you can talk to the person ringing your doorbell. You can ask him who he is and what he wants. If it's a delivery man, you can say something like, "Just leave it on the porch." You can also hear everything that he says as well. Never again will you have to open the door to a stranger, which is seldom a good idea. As far as installation goes, it takes about 10 minutes to install the basic models. So, after hearing all this, you might be asking yourself this question. Why did this homeowner open the door to four home invaders when he knew they might hurt and rob him? The answer? All the high-tech gadgets in the world can't fix stupid. The man could have saved himself physical harm and a lot of emotional duress simply by arming himself, getting behind cover, and calling 911. Oh, and just for the record, once you've chased off the invaders and they're in the car driving away, don't fire your gun at them. There is no legal justification for use of deadly force when the bad guys are trying to get away from you. All in all, this man did a rather poor job in home defense, and he's lucky to be alive. But, like I always say, give a man a little luck, and anything will do for brains.
That's an interesting thought. I'm fond of saying, you can be prepared, but don't ever give up on luck.
there you go.
Our movie for December, Words of Wisdom from Admiral McRaven. We just reviewed it, but you can still go to the Frontlines of Freedom website, go to the blog and get the link and watch it for free. If you haven't seen it, it's great. Next week on Frontlines of Freedom, Tom Homan, the former head of ICE, will return to discuss the disaster on our southern border. And David Bob will join us to discuss the Bill of Rights, and we'll cover support offered to vets by helpvet.net. Our book, Frontlines of Freedom, with 19 military authors, has the mission of helping all patriotic Americans step up and help our nation return to our traditional values of serving, not being served, of being in shape physically, mentally, and morally, of being proud of our nation. You can purchase that book on frontlinesoffreedom.com. Please help us get this call to action book into the hands of all Americans.
Thank you, friends, for joining us for Frontlines of Freedom today and every week on this great station. Please check us out on Facebook and add your comments. And if you missed any part of this show, hey, all our shows are available on demand at frontlinesoffreedom.com. We especially thank our military listeners for serving our country with honor and dignity and for keeping us all safe. God bless you and your families as you serve.
I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. Thank you, listeners all across America, for joining us in the foxholes on the front lines of freedom. Stand tall, be proud Americans, and join me next week for military and veteran information that you will not get anywhere else on the front lines of freedom. Happy New Year. Dismissed.